Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of April 18th, 2017. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Very well, D.R. Very well. Well, D.R., for people in the climate movement, hopefully people who are just joining the climate movement, have probably heard about the fact that there is a enormous march slated for both D.C. and across the country on April 29th. Have you heard about that?
Yes, the People's Climate March, or also known as the People's Climate Mobilization, which is an interesting description of it, because right around the time of this, there was apparently a new movie coming out, a new documentary coming out with the title "Normal Is Over," discussing the climate crisis. And there's a clip in this movie in which Al Gore is asked, you know, what needs to be done, and he says there needs to be a massive mobilization. Mm-hmm. And it can be argued that this march coming up on the 29th will be part of that mobilization.
It's an interesting turn of phrase, right? Instead of a movement, it's a mobilization. And there's some, I guess I'd have to think through what the context of that word is or why it sounds different. But you're mm-hmm. right. Well, I guess the fact that there is the People's Climate Mobilization on April 29th, and we'll put up links to how you can participate, got me thinking about the history of this sort of mass people in the street as it relates to the climate change issue. Mm-hmm. And I thought I wanted to take a moment to kind of go back through my own memory and sort of recreate that and discuss what we think, you know, what happened and why, right? Maybe this is called the second draft of history, right, after you've mm-hmm. had all the reports. My memory is that the first time there was any kind of self-conscious meeting of climate people happened, curiously enough, in April of 2007. Okay, mm-hmm. so that's now 10 years ago, almost exactly. 10 years ago, April of 2007, a guy named Bill McKibben, with his group called 350.org, put out a call for people across the country to have an event in their own town, their own backyard, and send to his organization, 350.org, pictures of their mm-hmm. event, right? Because they were a small group. They didn't have the resources to really put together a big national march. And in fact, a big national march, in some sense, is anathema to what they were trying to do. They were trying to be local. Mm-hmm. But that was the first time at any significant level, I think, correct me, correct me if I'm wrong, that anything happened with climate. And that was called the Step It Up event, right? D.R., do you yes. remember any of that? Are you familiar with the history there?
Yes, it was Step It Up 2007. There were 1,400 rallies around the country calling for action on the climate crisis. The New York Times reported at the time that it was, quote, described by organizers as the largest environmental demonstration in the country since the 1970 Earth Day. And the theme of it, as according to the New York Times report, was to urge Congress to cut carbon emissions 80% by 2050. And that was obviously during a time when there was, you know, a rising awareness stemming from Al Gore's movie, stemming mm-hmm. from Hurricane mm-hmm. Katrina, about the need for Congress to take action on carbon pollution. And those marches ultimately precipitated what happened in 2009 in the House, where the House passed the Waxman-Markey cap and trade yeah. bill, which yeah. was ultimately sabotaged in the Senate by the political machinations of, among others, Senator Lindsey Graham.
Well, I mean, the other thing that I think was notable about that very first event 10 years ago now mm-hmm. was that the 350 people did something very clever. They asked for photographs of the local events, and then they posted hundreds and hundreds of pictures, sometimes with, you know, five people standing in front of a pine tree somewhere, and other times with much larger groups. But for me, it was this sort of different approach, and I was kind of scratching my head at the time, because it seemed like, you know, I'm not very media savvy, I suppose, but it seemed to me like, is this really the way you want to go? But it turned out to be wildly successful. I think those sites are still up. I mean, I haven't looked recently, but the 2007 Step It Up March was really a groundbreaker. And I guess not to toot my own horn very much, but I remember there was an event up in Lexington, and I was asked to be the MC of it. And who did I get to introduce at this rally of maybe 200 or 300 people in Lexington on the Lexington Common, but both Bill McKibben, who of course comes from the area originally, right? And Ed Markey, who at the time was the representative from the area. And of course, I mean, they wouldn't know me from Adam now, but I mean, I am proud to say that I was on the same stage with him at one point in 2007. So anyway, from a historical perspective, that is kind of the landmark, groundbreaking first action. And then I think subsequent to that, a couple years later, they did it again. And so then on the date, October 10th, 2010, right, 10-10-10, there was another set of such protests. They were local events where you photographed everything and sent it up to the 350.org website. And I remember here in my hometown, we did things like we went to church bells would ring 350 times to signify the 350 parts per million, right? There were events. And again, this was the second time it had happened, and people were enthusiastic about it, right? So you have the 27 event, the 2010 event. And then, I get a little hazy on the dates. Remind me, maybe you're no better. So we go from 2010 to 2012, right? I think it was in 2012 that the Keystone XL stuff had popped up. And it was in August of 2012 that the famous arrests in front of the White House happened. Do I have that date right?
2011. It was August.
It was 2011. 2011. Okay, August of 2011. That was where McKibben and like 100 other people got arrested in front of the White House protesting Keystone, right?
Yes, I think Jim Hansen Jim Hansen and Daryl Hannah, among others, were also arrested in those protests.
And that was when McKibben was calling for people to identify who was president when they were born, right? Because he wanted older, more mature people to show up and get arrested and not put kids at risk, which is I completely agree with. But that, again, was a turning point. I keep thinking that's going in the future is going to sort of be like Henry VIII at Agincourt, or however you pronounce that, from the Shakespearean play about we happy few. I mean, I wish I had been there at that. I wish I had gotten arrested. And I'm sure there's many more than 100 people who would claim to have been arrested because it was kind of a seminal event. Right? It was the first civil disobedience act related to climate change, right?
And a couple of months after that, in November of 2011, you had demonstrators encircle the White House, calling upon President Obama. 1 year before the 2012 presidential election, calling upon President Obama to say no to the Keystone XL pipeline. Of course, 4 more years would pass until he ultimately did, but he would not have made that decision were it not for these protests and these demands. As we always say, power concedes nothing without one.
Absolutely, and you're right. I mean, it was that fall, so it was November. I remember at that point. We were podcasting at that point. I remember going down to that event. It was a beautiful day in Washington, D.C., and they had what you nowadays you would call a black snake, right? A long pipeline that they all the way around the White House, holding hands as everyone stood encircling the White House. And rumor had it that Obama, God bless him, at the time was coming back from playing golf, and he had to drive through the line, and he was impressed with the fact that all those people were there talking about Keystone XL pipeline, and it made an impression on him, right?
Yes. And then about a year and a half later, we had the Forward on Climate March in Washington, D.C. in February of 2013, in which I believe the estimate was about 35 to 40,000 people showed up. And that was notorious because unfortunately CBS and NBC only gave it a combined 40 seconds of coverage.
Right. And this was winter of 2013 or something, right?
That's correct.
Because I was at that one too. So I've got all these reasons that I'm sort of interested in recounting this I was at that one and it was so freezing cold. I mean, we're standing in front of the Washington Monument, and it was just bitterly cold. But it made an impression, right? There were, and at that time, 40,000 people was a lot of people on a cold day in February to come out and talk about Keystone XL. It was quite an event. It was very heartening for people attending it, and again, a watershed. So now we're what? We're 2013. So then the big turning point for the climate movement was in September of 2014, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in September of 2014, there was a UN, a meeting of the United Nations, which was basically to put in motion at the international negotiation level, put in motion the processes that eventually gave us the Paris Accord. Right, which we all love and protect. But again, it was Bill McKibben. These are all 350 Bill McKibben events. They organized a march in New York City in September of 2014 to go basically close to the UN or march through New York City. And at that event, I'll let you say it, Dr. How many people – did you go to that? I mean,
Yes, I did. One of 400,000 people who attended just a great demonstration. And as you mentioned, McKibben was involved, Al Gore was involved, Leonardo DiCaprio was involved, Mark Ruffalo, Sting, and so many other, non-famous citizens all throughout the world.
399,999 of them, right?
Exactly. And also, again, sadly, the common denominator of the mainstream media ignoring it. In fact, if I remember correctly, Katrina VandenHeuvel that morning was on ABC This Week with George Stephanopoulos. If I recall correctly, she pointed out the window of ABC News headquarters and to say, why are we not discussing what's going on right outside our windows? And I'll never forget, it was only NBC Nightly News and the great Ann Thompson doing a great story about it. And then the next morning, CNN, nothing. MSNBC, nothing. ABC, CBS, NBC, it was as though it did not happen. Yeah. But we saw plenty of Exxon ads all over the television shows that morning.
Yeah, I mean, so if you're new to the climate movement or did not get a chance to go to New York City in 2014, it was really quite almost spiritual. I mean, I was there at Central Park, and just the people, it went on forever and ever. You could, in both directions, it was 400,000 people in the streets of New York. And in fact, part of the issue was everything got delayed because there were so many more people than they had anticipated, right? They had people flowing out of the streets into the side streets, trying to get them all lined up. And it was quite an event. There was no speakers because you couldn't get all 400,000 people in one place. But it was a fantastic march. And I think that the interesting part in all the analysis subsequently, Dia, I don't know if you read it, but was saying that this was the moment where the climate movement became self-conscious. Right, where it knew that it existed and that there were other people that really truly cared. Right? Did you see anything like that?
Yeah, there were plenty of articles around this theme, and also it was recognized at the time that the climate movement became a potent political force. And there is tremendous speculation. I think all of it is accurate that demonstration was the turning point of Obama beginning to realize that he had a moral duty to say no to the Keystone XL pipeline.
Right. So anyway, September 2014 is a big date. But then you fast forward yet another year to 2015. Correct me if I'm wrong, but this is the year that McKibben and his Naomi Klein went on the Do the Math tour. Right. So McKibben had written that fairly influential article saying that we simply, if you do the math and look at how much fossil fuel is in the ground and how much can be put in the air, you simply could not burn all that fossil fuel, right? And that was the genesis of the keep it in the ground and the divestment movement, because he again brilliantly said, look, here's the obvious thing. You cannot burn all that fuel and still have a planet. And that has become, again, a core principle of much of the climate movement. And that was 2015, and I remember going to the Orpheum Theater down in downtown Boston, seeing him speak. It was a pretty pretty interesting time. Of course, that was not 400,000 people, right? That was in the Orpheum Theater, much smaller venue. Indeed. But there you go.
Indeed. And around that time, we also had, you know, the demonstrations at Harvard and I believe at MIT, calling upon those schools to divest. You had a massive rally that I recall that Jane Fonda and Emily Klein were involved in Canada, protesting the Keystone XL pipeline and agitating in that country against it. I mean, again, you mentioned that there were no official speakers at the People's Climate March, but if you think about it, there were 400,000 speakers, all stating with one voice that it was time to act.
And they were all very official. So then now we're getting into more recent times, right? After 2015 came 2016, and in 2016, I think a lot of us were mesmerized by the Dakota Access Pipeline protests, right? That was, again, now I did not go to Dakota, although I knew people who did, but that was, again, for my money, the Dakota Access Pipeline was when you began to recognize the climate impact on as an environmental justice topic, right? Where, I mean, because the same year Flint happened, and you could see this terrible injustice being done to the Standing Rock Sioux, and it was right in your face. You could not ignore it, right?
And again, the common denominator that we talked about before about how the mainstream media didn't pay any attention until Shailene Woodley and other activists got involved, and only then did they decide to pay attention. Right. It's like, you know, the plight of Native American water protectors wasn't enough to attract the mainstream press's attention, but once a celebrity gets involved, all of a sudden the cameras show up.
So, for better or worse, the Dakota Access Pipeline was just last November and December, and that brings us right up almost to the present. So, I'm sure everyone's aware that just on January 21st were enormous across the country. The Women's March happened, which was like, I don't know how many, 2 or 3 million people were said to be involved in different marches around the country. Here in Boston, there was something like 175,000 people on Boston Common, right? That was the number?
I believe so, yes.
It's really something to be part of that big a crowd. If you've never done it, I mean, not that I've done it that often, but to be part of 400,000 people acting more or less in unison, or 175,000 people with a common purpose, it really impacts you.
Definitely.
So basically, that was last January. That brings us up to the present. And right now, what we got coming is the next chapter, right? The next turn of the screw, which is on the 20th. So tell me, DR, what's happening on the 22nd of April of 2017?
We have the March for Science in D.C. On April the 22nd, and there'll be several satellite marches all around the country, and that's a week before the April 29th People's Climate Mobilization, also in D.C., with several satellite marches across the country as well.
Right, and my intention is to go to the the Science March in Boston on April 22nd, and then to catch a bus, which is still available, to go down to D.C. for the April 29th event. And it's my hope that the April 29th event down in D.C. will rival the 2014 event in New York City, that there'll be enough people to make both a consciousness shift among people that care about the issue, and get those people united and motivated, mobilized, as you would say, DR. But tell me, tell me, DR, all those 400,000 people, let's hope they all go to Washington, D.C. on April 29th. What is the impact of that contingent upon, in the sense of what's the other action those 400,000 people would have to take in order to make it worthwhile to have done anything?
Well, they have to keep on walking to the next polling place or voting booth and basically casting their votes for action to reduce carbon pollution, because, you know, it's one thing to march, it's quite another thing to vote. And, you know, Barney Frank has said that, you know, the former Congressman Barney Frank has said that, you know, the marches in the 1960s, the reason why people had to resort to marching was because they were disenfranchised in terms of voting rights. Now, if you have people who do have voting rights, notwithstanding the attempts to limit voting rights in this country, if you have people who do have voting rights and they don't exercise those voting rights, then all the marching will be for naught. Again, the voices can be heard in the streets, but voices also have to be heard on election day.
I think that that is a major, major point to make. That a couple of shows ago, we talked about the asymmetry of intensity. Right. Mm-hmm. We have to have climate activists who care as much about what their elected representatives are doing to interact with them in a convincing way as much as it is to march through the street. So, I mean, I think they feed on each other. Right. They certainly feed it, you know, but we want to go to the march in April and then make darn heck sure you're going to vote the next time. And not just voting in national elections, but voting in your local elections for candidates to the selectmen or at your town meeting or whatever the local thing is. Pick out those people who have a clean energy perspective, right?
All politics is local. You have to think globally and vote locally.
There you go. Well, I couldn't have said it better myself, DR, so we're going to have to leave it there. What I will try and do is put up links to some stuff about the history of these various marches. If I can find them, I will put up links to the podcast that we made about several of these marches, because for historical purposes, you might be interested to hear them. You are able to still buy tickets to go to New York, to Washington, D.C. I'll put up a link in the blog to, I think it's 350MA is still setting up buses. You should know that the show is the 18th. Tomorrow on the 19th is the MCAN webinar, which we will be discussing the legislative priorities for MCAN in Massachusetts for the next year. Please sign up. It'll be an interesting discussion with Carol Oldham, the executive director of MCAN. So you get all that stuff to look forward to. You can't, no chance to be bored. So, DR, that'll be on the blog. It's at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find the show on our Facebook page at massclimateaction. You can listen to this show directly on your smartphone using Stitcher or TuneIn Radio or Overcast or Podbean or SoundCloud, or even in this modern age on a thing called Google Play if you happen to have an Android. DR tweets at DR Tucker, right, DM? At DR Tucker, and I do it at Ted McIntyre 100. Because there must be 99 other Ted McIntyres out there somewhere on Facebook. I haven't found them yet. So we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So, DR, thank you for being here.
Thanks.
Thanks to everyone for listening, and we'll see you all in Washington, D.C. very soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.